What is going on? We have returned, the MMA podcast, Friday, May 10th, coming at you, coming right after the UFC 237 weigh-ins. Me and my boy P Money, he's on Twitter at Sweet Pappy Jones. Pat, what's going on, homie?
Big Walt, we are just chilling, good sir. It is a beautiful day. The breeze is rolling in. We're chilling, getting ready for a big UFC pay-per-view tomorrow. Thug Rose defending her strawweight belt against Jessica Andrade. Should be a fun scrap, some good bouts leading up to it. All kinds of fun MMA last week, had some good MMA this week, and ready for some UFC to cap it off, my man.
Yeah, probably the two greatest Brazilian fighters of all time, Jose Aldo and Anderson Silva, squaring off against Volkanovski and Cannonier, respectively. We'll be breaking all those fights down in a little bit. But I guess we'll start with looking back. I don't want to focus too much on that Cerrone-Aya Quinta card because it did happen just about a week ago. But, man, what a performance by Donald Cerrone. Now, you know, it seems he has a new fire lit on under him, that he is a father. His whole career hasn't really stressed going after the championship, but all of a sudden says that is driving him, and he really wants to go for that UFC gold. He's had one championship fight in his career, in which he lost to Rafael Dos Anjos. Now 3-0, coming off a big win against Aya Quinta, like I just mentioned. What do you think is next? Probably, you know, it's got to be a huge fight now that he took out Aya Quinta, who in his own right was in the top five. The two names I'm hearing getting thrown around are equally as appetizing as a UFC fan. We have, obviously, that Conor McGregor fight. The two squared off verbally back a couple years ago at a press conference, and we got a little preview of what a Cerrone-McGregor showdown might look like. But Conor, you know, ever since the Floyd fight, he has been pretty hard to peg down. I think since that big lightweight championship win against Eddie Alvarez, that seems like it was years and years ago, because it was. He has one fight since, the fight against Khabib, if I'm not mistaken. So he is a little hard to nail down. If we couldn't get that fight, another one that I'm sure would be a crowd pleaser are two guys who are electric, go out there to entertain the fans, and would be a likely favorite for fight of the year before it even goes down. And that would be a fight between Donald Cerrone and Justin Gaethje. Both of those fights, you know, would have title implications. You have Khabib, who will be returning from suspension, it looks like, this fall, and it looks like a fight against Dustin Poirier is lined up. You also have Tony Ferguson, who, according to Ariel Helwani, was just in Las Vegas a couple days ago to discuss his future, his next fight with the UFC. And just, I think, yesterday posted on Instagram something along the lines of, you know, king status. So it seems like he is happy, and we might have news coming around the bend about what is next for Tony Ferguson, who I think is on right now a 12 or 13 fight win streak. So he's obviously not far from the belt, even though it does seem like that matchup between he and Khabib Nurmagomedov is cursed. I believe it's been scheduled four times now and has fallen through every single time, whether it be to weight cut or tripping on cords and tearing your ACL or whatever injury he incurred. Long story short, Pat, what next for Donald Cerrone, who wowed the crowd in Ottawa, balling out like Air Canada, Jody High Roller? What's next for the cowboy?
Oh, man. You know, Cerrone, he's definitely come back to the lightweight division in a major way, with victories over Alex Hernandez, big prospect, big victory over Aya Quinta. For Cerrone, I think the next logical step, and it seems like the rumors are already being thrown out there that Cerrone versus Tony Ferguson is in the works. It's being talked about, and it seems to make the most sense. Dustin Poirier, he just won the quote-unquote interim belt, so theoretically you would want to unify that with Khabib Nurmagomedov. Of course, Tony Ferguson was formerly the interim champ who never lost his interim championship but was stripped due to his injury, but he's still up at the top. He still beat everybody at the division, so it makes sense. Khabib is the champ. Dustin Poirier is number one. They fight it out, unify the interim and championship belts for the undisputed championship. Tony Ferguson, Donald Cerrone, they're 2 and 3 respectively right now, depending on which site you're looking at. And so it just makes sense. Have them fight it out, and winner of that fight gets the undisputed champion. I think that would be a great way to do it. Either that or, Jenkins, I believe you mentioned Donald Cerrone versus Justin Gaethje. That would be a fireworks fight. Both those guys are definitely very high up in the UFC's lightweight division. So there's no shortage of options for Donald Cerrone. Of course, as you mentioned, the fight with Conor McGregor, still he was definitely looking at that. Wants the money fight, as I'm sure a lot of them do, but I guess there's been some talks with the new ESPN Plus pay-per-view deal. If perhaps the same money is still there in a pay-per-view situation. So that could perhaps change some of these big money fights, and it may be just back to business as usual for Donald Cerrone, which is fighting very frequently and just racking up tons of post-fight bonuses.
Yeah, I think whatever is next for Donald, whether it's Tony Ferguson, Conor McGregor, Justin Gaethje, it's got post-fight bonus written all over it, because the guy has been fighting like a bat out of hell, just entertaining fight after entertaining fight. Moving on, speaking of entertaining cards, we had the debut to the second season, the 2019 season of PFL, PFL 12. Really interesting how they're doing it. They're kind of modeling PFL as close as they can to the big four sports, where you see standings and tables and points and rankings and all that. It's kind of refreshing in the era of companies like the UFC choosing the money fight over the fight that ought to be made, over the fighter that truly deserves the fight. There is no favoritism in the point structure of PFL. It just goes straight by how well you did. If you win, I believe you get between 3 and 6 points. You fight 3 times. I guess they'll do 6 events, and that will constitute their regular season. That will go from May until, I believe, around August. There, I think, is 12 fighters, between 10 and 12 fighters. I don't think it's set per weight class, but the top 8 fighters in each weight class move on to the knockout round, and then you've got to win your quarterfinal and semifinal fight in the same night, and then that sets up the championship night. I know last year they did it on New Year's Eve. Yep, and this year they're doing the same. And if they're doing it the same as last year, each champion walks away with $1 million. And last night's PFL event had a lot of exciting fights, a lot of finishes. You had Satabu Sai getting a explosive TKO liver kick and punch finish 17 seconds into his fight. Sarah Kaufman, a familiar name over there, defeating Morgan Fryer in the first round. Ray Cooper defeating Zane Kamaka in the second round via rear naked choke. Magomed Karamov defeating John Howard, another familiar name, via first round guillotine. And the main event, female judoka Kayla Harrison, who is the favorite in the women's lightweight division over there, taking on Larissa Pacheco, winning a very convincing 3-round decision, 30-25, 30-27, 30-27. Yeah, and it was a fun event. I saw Eve Edwards over there doing work on the mic for ESPN Plus. He did a great job. I'm excited. You know, there's not that same, you know, feeling that you get in the UFC of it being, you know, the premier organization in the world, but they aren't, you know, they're not pretending to be the UFC. They're doing their own thing. And like I mentioned, just the fact that they're actually set up in a way that, you know, merits actually winning fights and not just selling tickets and making the fights that will make money instead of the fights that ought to be made. Yeah, it was a fun first card, and we're going to be getting a lot of PFL fights over the next few months this summer. I'll probably be watching them. Pat, did you catch any of this PFL event?
You know, I actually did, Jake. It's, you know, I came up in the sport, definitely consider myself a hardcore. And when Bellator first came out, I was a big proponent of Bellator because they started in a tournament format. At the time, you had UFC, Strikeforce, Elite XC, Bo Dog fights, who knows how many you had. You had, oh gosh, what was the other one that was basically kind of trying to be PFL, but not the International Fighters League, I believe it was, or International Fight League, where there was teams, and there were so many different organizations, but all super similar. The tournament format to me has just always been so compelling. That's what the original UFC was. That is what a lot of competitions are. In wrestling, there's tournaments where you'll wrestle multiple times a day. Sometimes in a lot of mixed martial arts or in a lot of traditional martial arts, you know, be it karate or whatever the case may be, you're going to have tournaments where you're going to take on a lot of opponents in the same day, or at least in some kind of very formatted schedule. And as you mentioned, Jake, it's a very merit-based situation. There is no, well, this person won, but they didn't win the way we like, so we're going to insert someone else in the tournament. No, that's not happening. And the day it does is the day I call bullshit and stop being intrigued. Because the whole thing of it is just the meritocracy. And I think there is a lot of people want to find out who the best fighter is. And just creating a organization like this that is structured around that, and hopefully they don't 5 years down the road just ditch it like Bellator did, but hopefully they stick with it because I think it's a model that fans enjoy, and especially for the fighters to have the prospect of winning three fights and then getting $1 million. There doesn't seem to be a lot of pathways for a lot of mixed martial artists that are just that easy. You got to do a lot of grinding with your promotions, or, you know, depending on what organization you're with, what kind of promotions can you even get, or what kind of sponsorships can you get? It's very limited, but with PFL, they're presenting an opportunity for these fighters. It's basically you win three, four fights, and you get $1 million, and you're the champion. And I mean, that seems very, as an athlete, I would be very compelled to go the PFL route because there's a good payday waiting there. And as a consumer of the sport of mixed martial arts, I like it just because I find the tournament format exciting. They do have some good names in there, some recognizable names. Is it the UFC? No, not necessarily, but it'll be interesting. Like Bellator, ever since the Reebok deal, they've been getting better and better quality talent going over to their promotion. Now that PFL has a deal with ESPN, you know, they're on ESPN2, they're on ESPN Plus, actually to a large televised audience, and they have been with NBC Sports Network previously. It seems like something that would bring a lot of fighters into the fold, and seems, especially if they keep putting on good shows like they did last night, I think they got a good future here.
Yeah, the next PFL event will be in a couple of weeks, May 23rd. Lance Palmer and Alex Gilpin, the main event of that one. Moving on to the here and now, This week we had a couple of bits of news trickle down, including probably the main one being some clarity as far as what is next for the heavyweight championship. For a while, everything has kind of been in limbo. Everyone has sort of been waiting on Brock Lesnar. Will he or won't he leave pro wrestling, that is. And it looked like he would be leaving to pursue a career, at least a fight versus Daniel Cormier, who currently has the belt. He did that whole appearance in the cage with him. Some rumors that Lesnar may have failed a USADA test are going around. I don't know whether to believe it or not, but it wouldn't be that shocking if it was true. But whether or not it is, we did get a little bit of closure as far as knowing that Brock Lesnar will not be returning, at least for the here and now, will not be returning to the cage. And instead, we have Stipe Miocic stepping in to fight Daniel Cormier for the heavyweight championship of the world. Stipe has not taken a fight since losing the belt. And I'll get into that a little bit later. But what do you like this matchup for DC? Does anyone else stand out? I think if Brock obviously was not, we had talked just now about the PFL and who deserves getting a title shot and who has earned it. Brock Lesnar certainly has not earned it. But at the same time, Daniel Cormier has earned a fight against Brock Lesnar, if that makes sense. That would be a huge fight, and DC being the champ, getting a cut of that card, and the revenue made with that, it was a hard spot for Stipe. I don't know if he did himself any good, won himself any favors acting the way he did, just basically pouting and sitting out since losing the belt to DC in the first round. But nonetheless, it ended up, whether it was the right move or not, it ended up kind of working out for him because he is here. He is waiting for the fight. And it looks like DC needs a dance partner. And honestly, I think he has earned it just based on the fact that he was on the greatest title streak ever for a heavyweight champion. Before we get too deep into the matchup, what do you think of the UFC making that title fight, which I believe will be in Anaheim in August, Stipe versus Cormier 2?
Well, I'm really glad that they actually did it. I feel like it's long overdue, Jake. This fight probably could have happened, around the holidays last year, I would say. I mean, I feel like it's been so long. I don't even remember when DC versus Stipe first fought. It seems like they could have done this much longer. Maybe, and it has been a bad look for DC, or for Stipe, I'm sorry. I would say with the sitting out and things like that, but in all fairness, I mean, hey, maybe he should have gotten the immediate rematch. It's hard to say when you get knocked out in the first round like that, and truly back in the day, I feel like usually even the champs would get a tune-up fight before they came back and fought for the belt again. Maybe that's what the UFC wanted, and they probably could have done that and had Stipe back where he's getting another crack at DC again. But be that as it may, it's finally coming around. DC versus Stipe 2, this is going to be a great one. Stipe is going to be very motivated in there, but DC, one of the goats, truly, in the heavyweight division. He's never been beaten. He's only ever lost in mixed martial arts to John Jones, who is one of the greatest of all times himself. Say what you want about his doping and things along those lines, he has been one of the best mixed martial artists to ever compete. And This is definitely a big fight for the heavyweight division, a big fight for both fighters' legacies, really. Stipe versus DC. It's going to be a great one. And certainly, I think with DC only having a couple fights left in his career, I mean, you're fighting the guy who has done something that DC himself had never done, which is defended the UFC heavyweight belt more than anybody. So you are getting a big, meaningful fight in that sense in this fight. It's not just, you know, taking on the next big prospect. This is a fight with some weight to it. So I like that they finally got it going.
Yeah, and we will save the fight breakdown for when the fight gets a little bit closer. Plus, you know which way I'm going to lean because I'm a little bit biased there. But, another fight between Stipe and DC. I don't think I've heard anyone complaining about that one. Another fight, you will hear no complaints about, a fight at 145 that has big implications for that title. Brian Ortega and Zabit Magomed Shapira, you knew you would see this fight made eventually. And now, you know, seems about the right time. You have Ortega coming off a title fight loss to Max Holloway, and Zabit, who remains undefeated and is climbing that ladder. I imagine Zabit would probably be the favorite in this one. And there are not many people at 145 who would be given favorite status against a absolute killer like Brian Ortega. And, you know, I say Zabit probably will be the Vegas favorite, and in that I'm saying that I think Zabit too will probably win the fight. Like I said, you know, there's no real obvious glaring holes in either guy's game. Just Zabit has seemed to be one of these guys, almost like a Khabib, who just steps in there and absolutely enforces his game plan on you, no matter what the other guy wants to do. Just and I mean, just his speed, grappling. You have high level coaches saying that Zabit is the greatest talent they've ever seen. Isn't just a championship talent, but an all time talent. And we've seen him continue to get better and better and better. I think the only guy at 145, I think I would pick to win against Magomed Shapirov is the current champion, Max Holloway. And even then, you know, we saw a few holes in Holloway's game in his recent fight against Dustin Poirier that Zabit might be able to take advantage of when that fight goes down. I say win because it does seem like an inevitability, even if he does lose to Brian Ortega. Both Max, Zabit, and Ortega, for that matter, are all so young. I feel like we'll see those three guys fight one another a few times before their careers come to an end. But yeah, I'm leaning Zabit, very much looking forward to what could be easily, especially if Zabit is the winner, a title eliminator at featherweight.
Yeah, this is definitely a big featherweight fight announcement. Definitely some big implications there, and a good step up for Zabit. You know, Zabit, he's on a three-fight streak. Just got the W over Jeremy Stevens. I hate to report my boy, the little heathen, but a very hard-fought battle, good battle. But Brian Ortega, definitely even another step up in competition there. So he's climbing the ladder, and Zabit is climbing the ladder quickly from Kyle Bochniak and Chris Davis to Jeremy Stevens and Brian Ortega. Man, those are some big fights right there. Ortega, he's looking to bounce back from his defeat against Max Holloway in their fight in December. He's had some months to heal up now. Really, Ortega's first defeat, he's looked pretty dang good against everybody. Floored Edgar with a giant uppercut. Choked out Cub Swanson prior to that. So he's had some good finishes against everybody. He's definitely a finisher. Great killer instinct there. Gonna be a big fight there. I would say, man, it's hard for me to go against some of these young up and coming Russians. I think Zabit just may have what it takes to take out Ortega. It's gonna be a very tough fight though. I think initially I'm probably leaning Zabit by decision, maybe even a split. I think this one's gonna be a close one. I'm gonna have to study a little tape prior to fight day to make a more accurate assessment on this one.
And you mentioned that, you know, incredible group of young Russians who not only seem to have impeccable wrestling, but, you know, cardio on point, striking, getting better and improving, ground and pound, awesome. You know, currently the face of that movement is Khabib Nurmagomedov, but honestly, the greatest talent in that pool might turn out to be Zabit and Magomed Shapirov. We're both leaning Zabit. Word on the street. Anything else you want to touch on before we get to this Saturday's card? Not much time between recording this and breaking down the card, but it would be remiss to not break it down. UFC 237 going down this Saturday in Rio de Janeiro at the Genesee Arena. Thug Rose becoming the second American champion to go down to Brazil and defend her belt. And like they have mentioned ad nauseum on ESPN, that was a very different circumstance. Rousey stepping in there as a giant favorite against Betch Kohea, where Rose, Thug Rose is, I believe, a slight underdog right now against the hometown challenger, Jessica Andrade. I guess we'll start with the prelims, though. We start with the early prelims that I'm just going to skip because all six of those names I have no recognition of. If you want to go check out the early prelims, go to Wikipedia or something. But we'll start with the ESPN prelims. A couple of very familiar faces. BJ Penn taking on Clay Guida. As a longtime BJ Penn fan, I've expressed this for years now. It pains me to see him step in there and get finished over and over and over. Clay Guida, I guess it's a winnable fight, but he is a heavy underdog. I think BJ Penn, if I check right now, yeah, plus 600 in Vegas. Not very good odds. His chin has shown to be questionable at best. Guida minus 705. Has obviously aged some, but not really regressed near as much as Penn. So it pains me to break that fight down, but BJ not really in a great position right there. Warley Alves versus Sergio Moraes at welterweight. Thiago Moises versus Kurt Holobaugh at lightweight. And Little Nog versus Ryan Spann at light heavyweight. With that one, you know, you're seeing a lot of familiar Brazilian names on this card. I believe Little Nog just came with a win over Smiling Sam, if I am correct. Yeah. I don't know. Little Nog is the face of inactivity. Just look at that bizarre fight he had with Rashad Evans in 2013. If you take the fight to Little Nog, like Ryan Bader did, like Shogun did, like a lot of people have, he seems to not be able to take the onslaught that well. We'll see what this young guy Spann can do. The odds seem to be favoring Spann, so I'll go with Spann too. Pat, any thoughts on these prelims? Also, I guess it's worth mentioning that Betch Kohea missed weight. She and her fight with Irene Aldana got moved up to catch weight and moved up to the main card. Bitch Kohea losing 30% of her purse, and Carlos Fajeda versus Francisco Trinaldo, scheduled originally to take place on the main card, but today Fajera was forced out of the bout as he was deemed medically unfit to cutting weight due to a medical issue. I have Aldana in that one because I don't know, whenever anyone misses weight, it usually points to the fact that they tried real hard and couldn't. They might not be 100% going into the fight, so I'm taking Aldana in that one. The odds there have moved quite a bit since weigh-ins. Aldana now a big favorite at minus 350. Any thoughts on the prelims, Pat?
Yeah, you know what? I'm actually very much looking forward to the prelims. I think it's going to be a stacked card down here in Brazil. Talita Bernardo versus Vivian Araújo, Hone and Barcelos versus Carlos Joaquin, and Luana Carolina versus Priscilla Cachoeira for the ESPN Plus prelims. Should be some good scraps all the way around. Going up to the ESPN portion, Clay Guida versus BJ Penn. I love Clay Guida. I love BJ Penn. Both some of my favorite fighters from 12, 13, 14 years ago. When Clay Guida is a minus 700 favorite against you, BJ Penn, it may be time to hang it up. In fact, it has been time to hang it up since that Frankie Edgar fight in 2014, where he looked literally like a vegetable in the octagon.
I was there. That was not good times.
No, it didn't look like good times. It looked like a person who barely had control of their own body movements, let alone the ability to fight in a cage. I have not seen that from BJ Penn, and I can't recall the last time, but I definitely think Guida will smother him quite handily. Shouldn't be too much of a tough fight for Clay Guida tomorrow. Orly Alves versus Sergio Moraes. That's a competitive matchup that I like to see. Both these guys are 2-2 in their last four. Both guys coming off a loss. 2-1 in their last three, though, if you want to look at it like that. I definitely a big fan of both guys. Both guys always bring it. Both have more of a submission-based style, but Alves, I think I would say, has a little bit better striking. I may be leaning his way. I'm a big fan of Moraes, though. Moraes is definitely a fantastic opponent. I feel like that one could be a coin flip. I'm kind of going back and forth on that one. Thiago Moises versus Kurt Hollebaugh should be some fun there. Not really sure who I'm going to pick with that one. I'm probably leaning Hollebaugh, actually. And then Ryan Spahn versus Rogério Nogueira. Lil Nug, oh man, that's going to be an awesome fight. Spahn definitely a potential prospect here at the 205-pound division. Rogério, he's just still hanging in there, still knocking everybody out. He is 2-2 in his last four, as opposed to Spahn, who's got a nice little win streak going right now for himself. I feel like I have to pick the young blood, but then again, we're talking about Lil Nog in Brazil. Spahn has been TKO'd a couple times, and Nogueira actually has more TKOs than Spahn does. Bigger competition. You know what, actually, I'm going with Lil Nog in Brazil. I think he's going to get it done, TKO.
I like the pick there. I'm going with Spahn as well. Moving up into the main card, where I guess we can break it down fight by fight. We got Loreno Staropoli, El Matador from Argentina, who's 1-0 in the UFC, made his debut 6 months ago at UFC Fight Night 140, taking on Thiago Alves, who I think has probably 25-plus fights in the UFC at this point, debuted back in 2005, has quite a bit more UFC experience than his opponent. Looked like he might have been at the end of the line just a couple of years ago, but he's really made a comeback, has looked good. Lost a couple of fights, but won against Max Griffin just this past February in Fortaleza, Brazil, via three-round decision, split decision. This is a fight where I believe, yeah, Vegas has... it just about dead even, both guys minus 105. I did look back at a couple of this Loreno Staropoli's fights. The guy is a blitzer, very, very fun fighter, looks like a brawler, and that kind of seems to fit into the fights that are more winnable for Thiago Alves. I feel like you look at a lot of the guys he has lost to, guys like Curtis Millender, Jim Miller, Carlos Condit, Alexei Kunchenko. They all were able to kind of pick them apart, make Alves chase them, where I think Loreno will be willing to exchange. And, you know, even though he's got a ton of fights under him, he's 35 now, had that brain issue a while ago, but luckily that seemed to pass and not be an issue at all. The guy has an iron chin, very hard to put down, and I think that will benefit him in this matchup. And I think I'm going to go with the grizzled vet here against the young gun. I'm going with Thiago Alves, the Brazilian, winning it in his home country against the Argentinian newcomer. Pat?
Well, I think that's a very sound breakdown, Jake. Thiago definitely seems to be in a much better place than he was perhaps a year or two ago, where it looked like he was definitely on his way out, but seems to at least gotten a little bit of a stay with a split decision victory over Max Griffin. This is in Brazil, as you mentioned, home country advantage, coming up against a guy in Loreno Staropoli that, albeit 1-0 in the UFC, doesn't have quite the same experience that Thiago does. Now, some would say, at what point does the experience turn into a liability due to road mileage? I don't know if we're still quite there yet. Alves, in as many fights as he had, he's only had three TKOs. Nothing really too severe, I would say. He's been in some wars for sure, but nothing too drastic. Nothing scary, I might say. I think he's still definitely got enough gas in the tank. I think I'm leaning Alves in this one as well.
And working up to the main event, the theme of the main card is Brazilian legends, because like I mentioned, we have maybe the best two Brazilian fighters of all time, Anderson Silva in the co-main event. I don't know what, you know, it makes sense too, because I believe they initially were trying to make this fight in Curitiba, which is Anderson's hometown. This was kind of a card built around him. I understand him also being in the co-main event because he is, you know, probably the most legendary fighter in the country's history. Kind of would have liked to see Aldo Volkanovski in the co-main event because it does seem to have a little bit more significance at their weight class. But I guess I'm just kind of getting picky there. But we will maintain order and stick with the way it goes. So Anderson is the co-main, so we'll start with Jose Aldo taking on Alex Volkanovski. You know, when I first heard about this fight being scheduled, my gut immediately leaned toward Volkanovski, being the up-and-coming guy, has looked dynamite. Kind of seems like he might be the next in line for a title shot there. Another one of these up-and-coming guys. But, you know, A, it's always been hard to pick against Jose Aldo. And another thing, too, the guy just has always seemed to perform so well against the wrestle boxers, whether it was back in the WEC against guys like Uriah Faber and Dominic Cruz. guys, you know, up and coming, like your Chad Mendezes and your Frankie Edgars. Just through the years, he's shown that he's able to wear them out over time. This is going to be a 3-round fight. I think Aldo's game plan is going to be to go to a decision. By the way, I believe Aldo is 10-0, 11-0. He's undefeated. He's never lost a judge's decision. And on top of that, the fight is going to be in Brazil. So I doubt, even if he gets the shit walloped out of him, that he loses a decision in his home country with all that home cooking down there in Rio. I think Aldo is going to look to stay on the outside and just whack Volkanovski's legs to death. My prediction, Aldo wins a unanimous decision, and on Sunday or Monday, on Alex Volkanovski's Instagram, he posts a picture of the side of his leg, and it's just black and blue, and everyone comments on it, and it's like, what the fuck? And Ariel retweets it, and everyone sees it, and everyone's like, damn, Jose Aldo just walloped the fuck out of Alex Volkanovski's front leg. I think Volkanovski has a bright future, and you know, he trains with a group of killers there in New Zealand. If I had to guess, I think he will probably at some point carry the strap. But right now, you know, you're going up against one of the greatest Brazilians of all time in Brazil, and I don't think Jose Aldo is quite done yet. I think he might have one title run left in his system, especially if you see Max Holloway, who has always seemed to have issues making 145. I know losing to Dustin isn't exactly going to make him want to go up to 155, but yeah, you know, no one holds the belt forever, so we'll see if Aldo is able to make one more run. But yeah, I see this one going to a decision, and I see this one going to Jose Aldo.
Well, I can definitely see it going down like that, Jake. As you mentioned, there's a lot of guys that kind of fit the similar mold that Jose Aldo has conquered several times before. The guy with the good, strong American wrestling background, with solid heavy hands. I mean, you can go back to Uriah Faber, Chad Mendez. I mean, the list goes on and on. More recently, Jeremy Stevens. Jose Aldo has taken out so many guys in that mold. And although the second fight with Chad Mendez was much closer than the first one, there's no cage grab to mar things. But Jose Aldo has still consistently come out on top against all different kinds of tests along those lines. And I would be inclined to think it's probably going to be more of the same against Volkanovski. Although Volkanovski definitely looks like a top-tier talent himself. He's really been impressive. Looks like he's really handled everybody thoroughly since he came into the UFC. And I was thinking that would continue with Jose, but Jake, I think we must have had kind of a similar revelation there, because at some point I said, you know what, this is just styles make fights, and we've seen Jose against this style, and we've seen him conquer it every time. So I got to go with Jose in this one. Volkanovski definitely looks like a stud, definitely looks like he's going to be around the top of the division for the foreseeable future. But Jose Aldo, he's still very much in the game, still one of the very best, and he's still killing dreams. So I got Jose Aldo. And also, I do agree, this, as far as divisional significance, absolutely should be billed above Anderson Silva. But Anderson Silva's getting that billing over Jose Aldo for sure.
And, you know, I hate to sound repetitive, but I sort of had the same exact thought process when I heard about Jared Cannonier against Anderson Silva. My first thought was, oh, Cannoneers, the up-and-coming guy, has looked exciting. You know, started off at 265, has now moved down, found his niche at 185, training at the MMA Lab. Seems to be growing by leaps and bounds, training with guys like John Crouch, Bendo, over there in Arizona. Used to be working a full-time job on the side. I think in the airline business, now has given that up, is fully dedicating 100% of his life to MMA. And we've seen it in his fights. He's getting better and better. Is a guy who, you know, I think has a ton of potential there. The guy just, you know, look at him. He is a specimen, athletic as hell. And my first thought was, you know, well, you have that dude who is a monster coming up against Anderson, who has lost a lot of fights, is obviously on the tail end of his career, just kind of got beat up against the now interim champ Israel Adesanya. But then I got to thinking, and this one wasn't necessarily the same exact reasoning, but I thought more along just the stylistic matchup here. And you have a guy in Cannoneer who will push the pace, will suffocate you, will rush at you, will swing away. And if there's one guy who is equipped to take care of that sort of offense and move back and is a counter striker, I mean, and his entire career, Anderson's game has been based around deadly precise counter striking, landing, whether it's that front foot, you know, KO or dodging punches against Forrest Griffin like he's in the Neo in the Matrix, and then popping up and landing a, you know, fade away hook KO. The guy is just known for being an absolute and maybe the best counter striker of all time. You know, the guy, that's what his bread and butter has always been made off. So, you know, the more I've thought, I'm like, man, Jared Cannoneer is, you know, I still has room to move up at middleweight, and especially training with guys like John Crouch when he starts to build up a really strong ground game, maybe can strike and his footwork gets to the point where he doesn't necessarily have to rush in a ton. He's got a lot of room to grow, but up to this point, that seems to be his MO. I hope it's not his MO in this fight, because if he tries to do what he has done and gotten a lot of success doing, and I think he will resort to at some point in doing during the fight, just because that is ingrained in his head that that will work. He's going to rush in, he's going to throw punches, he's going to miss, he's going to leave his chin wide open, and whether it's a knee, an elbow, a kick, a punch, Anderson Silva, I think, is going to finish Jared Cannoneer. Not sure what round, but I feel like Cannoneer will miss, leave his chin right open down Broad Street, and Anderson will thrill the crowd with a finish. Pat?
You know, this one, I definitely favor Anderson Silva going into this fight. Cannoneer, as you mentioned, he's definitely been making some leaps and bounds. He's been progressing with the MMA Lab. Definitely a good up-and-coming camp. Cannoneer has looked better and better himself as he's dropped down in weight. Had a good victory over David Branch last November. Coming up against Anderson Silva, though, as underwhelming as Anderson Silva has looked in literally every single fight since he took on Chris Weidman, since those losses, I think in his home country of Brazil, this is really Anderson Silva's fight. The judging will be there. And I think, you know, Anderson Silva, he didn't look terrible against Israel Adesanya. Adesanya, a younger version of him. You know, Adesanya is, I would say, almost like an Anderson Silva when he came into the UFC, albeit perhaps not with the same grappling pedigree. But Anderson Silva, I think he can still hang. He can still get it done. Like you said, Jake, it's kind of a similar analysis to the Jose Aldo versus Volkanovski. Cannonier is the young up-and-comer, but, I mean, even Cannonier, he doesn't even have quite as much hype on him as Volkanovski or some of the other up-and-comers in the division. So I think Anderson Silva will be able to get it done Saturday night.
And that brings us to the main event. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, Thug Rose, the second American champion ever to go down to Brazil and defend the belt against a Brazilian looking for her second defense. She took the belt off of Joanna Jędrzejczyk, defended it again against the former champ, and now looks to step in against Jessica Andrade, who has been just an absolute unit at 115 after moving down from 135. We questioned whether the power would be able to translate, and especially if she would be able to keep pace, but there seems to be no question marks as far as her being able to go at least three rounds. Whether or not she will be able to go five with Rose, I guess, is to be seen. But we did see Jessica Andrade fight their shared opponent, Joanna, once. Joanna won that fight. And, you know, I think that Rose is going to look to try and employ a lot of the things that not only Rose employed against Joanna, but Joanna employed against Jessica Andrade, which was distance control. And that's really going to be the name of the fight. Rose, taller, longer, and was able to get those wins off against Joanna because she was able to stay on the outside and control the distance of the fight. Joanna doing the same thing against Andrade, who, even though she did move down from 135, is considerably smaller than both Rose and Joanna, and is really going to need to sneak inside, land some bombs. And when she does, and when she does land, I think, she could finish any woman at 115. I wouldn't be shocked if we see Rose get dropped. This is a fight, the odds are dead even, and I'm not going to be shocked whether it goes either way. Even though I think I am picking Rose, Rose really impressed me against Joanna with her kicks. Her kicking game really seems to have improved the last year or two. You look at some of those crisp high kicks she landed against the former champ, and I feel like mixing in not just head kicks but low kicks is really going to allow her to outpace, out volume, stay on the outside, and not allow Jessica Andrade to get inside, because it's not just going to be a matter of not letting her get inside to land those big strikes, but she's shown her strength. You don't want to let her get a hold of you and toss you around. I feel like that is, if Andrade were to win, I feel like it wouldn't be necessarily her getting a KO, but we did see Rose fight some wrestlers back in the past and have a little bit of issue dealing with offensive strong wrestlers who are good at taking the fight to the mat. And if Andrade is able to get inside and get a hold of Thug Rose, it'll be interesting to see if Andrade is able to bring it to the mat and instill some ground and pound to try and win the belt in her home country of Brazil. Pat, how are you seeing this main event strawweight fight between Thug Rose and the challenger, Jessica Andrade?
Oh, boy. Well, you know what? The headline of this event, Jake, is really going to be a great one. The strawweight title on the line between Rose Namajunas and Jessica Andrade. And, man, I feel like I may be seeing this one a little differently. I mean, Rose Namajunas has always been impressive. She definitely has tools everywhere the fight goes. great striking, great submissions. She has a fantastic arsenal, a great toolbox. Very same can be said for Jessica Andrade, though. She's got some crisp boxing, good hands, lots of power. And, you know, they do have another common opponent, Karolina Kowalkiewicz. They both fought Karolina. Rose Namajunas, I believe, lost a decision to Karolina. And we all probably remember what happened when Jessica Andrade fought Karolina. A gigantic TKO in the first round for Jessica Andrade there. And Karolina, definitely a larger opponent at 115 pounds. Man, and Jessica, you do bring up a good point, Jake, of the stamina issue. This is going to be a 25-minute fight. We did see Jessica Andrade go 25 minutes with Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I feel like she held up pretty good there. I'd have to go back and rewatch that fight. That was some time ago. But at 115 pounds, it seems like she's been able to keep up the pace very well for all 15 minutes. It seems like she's able to put up a hard 15 minutes. When she took on Claudia Gadelha, I believe that one went all 15, and I seem to remember her putting up a pretty ferocious pace in that one. So hopefully the cardio will hold up for I mean, I'm a big fan of both ladies. Either way this fight goes, I won't be disappointed. I'm sure either way this fight goes, it's going to be a very fun one. But I think I'm probably leaning Jessica Andrade in this one, Jake. As much as I hate to pick against Thug Rose, I love Rose Namajunas. You know, as you mentioned with the head kicks, if she tries winging some of those and misses, Jessica Andrade, she is a very powerful grappler. She has great takedowns, and she has some good control on the ground. Thug Rose, she does have good submissions herself. The long limbs would probably leave her open to some good attempts, maybe even some sweeps. Ooh, I don't know. It's a fun fight. It's definitely one of the closer fights on the card. I want to say this is a very close fight betting-wise. Definitely a coin flip of a fight. But forced to make a pick for the MMA podcast listeners, I'm going with the very slight betting favorite, I believe, in Jessica Andrade on Saturday night. I think it's going to be Anne New in Brazil.
You heard it here first, your boy P Money. Saying and new, he's got Jessica Andrade in the main event. I'm saying and still, I got Thug Rose. Only one way to find out, and that's to watch the damn event tomorrow night. We will be back next week to break it all down. We hope to see you then. Thank you so much for tuning in. Pat, anything for the people before we fly?
Oh, Jake, you know it's nothing but love for the people, nothing but love for yourself. Appreciate all the listeners. Appreciate everybody in the MMA community. Good looking out, and always a pleasure, Jake. Can't wait for the next episode.
I appreciate everybody except for Alan. Appreciate you. Appreciate these fights coming up Saturday. We'll see you next week. And until then, we gone.